We're driven by the search for better. But when it comes to hiring, the best way to search for a candidate isn't to search at all. Don't search, match with Indeed. Indeed is your matching and hiring platform with over 350 million global monthly visitors, according to Indeed data, and a matching engine that helps you find quality candidates fast. Ditch the busy work. Use Indeed for scheduling, screening, and messaging so you can connect with candidates faster. Leveraging over 140 million qualifications and preferences every day, Indeed's matching engine is constantly learning from your preferences. So the more you use Indeed, the better it gets. Join more than 3.5 million businesses worldwide that use Indeed to hire great talent fast. And listeners of this show will get a $75 sponsored job credit to get your jobs more visibility at Indeed.com/Blue Wire. Just go to Indeed.com/Blue Wire right now and support our show by saying that you heard about Indeed on this podcast. That's Indeed.com/Blue Wire. Terms and conditions apply. Need to hire? You need Indeed.
What's going on, everybody? It is Monday. You're listening to the RotoWire Fantasy Basketball Pod. I am Nick Whalen. The man next to me is not Alex Barutha, who is road tripping his way down to Indianapolis, I believe, to get an up-close and personal look at one of the eclipse hotspots. I mean, we're, I guess, technically doing this pod during an eclipse. Isn't that right, Kyrian Sprecher?
It is. My natural lighting through the window kind of went down, so I had to turn some lights on to make sure you could see my face.
I was gifted some eclipse glasses by my wonderful mother-in-law. If you're watching this live, you can see I am trying them on. They don't fit my face very well. They're not overly fashionable. I will say, Kyrian, I went outside for a little bit after the XM show during what was supposed to be like the peak period. It was kind of cool. A little bit of a letdown. It didn't notice any like dramatic changes in lighting here in the suburban Milwaukee area.
Me either. My cat was kind of interested. He got a little darker, and he popped his head out on our balcony a little bit. But and I went out, and I didn't really notice anything. I live in a pretty big apartment complex. Okay. There are a bunch of people like looking on from their balconies, but there wasn't much excitement going on.
All right, well, that'll do it for eclipse talk. Barring something, you know, still got the window open here. If something crazy happens, we'll be sure to keep you updated. But first of all, I appreciate you jumping in place of Alex. I know you've hopped on the pod plenty of times with Dr. A. Throughout the season, we've had you on the SiriusXM show as well, a big part of our NBA coverage over at RotoWire. Obviously, it's the final week of the fantasy season. Every league that I'm in, I believe, has wrapped up, or you know, I am either no longer in contention or my fate has been sealed in that league. With that said, if your league is still ongoing, by all means, please feel free to throw some questions in the chat. We're happy to give you some advice. Try not to ask us about teams like the Portland Trailblazers or the Memphis Grizzlies over what's going to happen this week, because we were going through and, you know, auditing our projections. Those teams are a complete mess. I have no idea how to project the Memphis Grizzlies this week. I have no idea who's going to be out there for the Portland Trailblazers. Obviously, those teams really have nothing to play for at this point. But that is not the case for really the majority of the league, Kyrian. I mean, you look at the Eastern Conference right now, Milwaukee continues to free fall. I think they might have hit rock bottom yesterday, I tell you that. They're only one game up on the now 3-seed Orlando Magic, who have the same record but do have the tiebreaker over the New York Knicks. And really only 4 games separate the 2-seed Milwaukee Bucks and the 8-seed Miami Heat. Not quite as dramatic out west, but there's a little bit more segmentation in the Western Conference, right? I mean, 3 teams are still in the mix for the number one seed in the West, those being Minnesota, Denver, and OKC. Then there's kind of that tier two of the Clippers and the Red Hot Mavericks. And then you have the Suns, the Pelicans, the Kings, and the Lakers, all those teams separated by a game and a half.
Yeah, it is a logjam in multiple different areas and different segmentations, like you said. The Bucks free-falling, I've been hot on them, high on them when I've hopped on the SiriusXM show, and the last 4 games have been abysmal. Obviously, the Knicks are better competition than their three previous losses, which were to the Wizards and Grizzlies and someone at Portland maybe, but just absolutely horrible. They're letting a couple teams stick around. Like you said, the Magic have now jumped to the 3-seed, but they also may have lost Franz for a couple days. He sprained his ankle. I think that the latest update was that he's just kind of day to day and questionable for tomorrow. But, you know, that could obviously mean he sits out a couple games as they gear up for the playoffs. In the West, you know, that fight for the number one seed is really interesting. You got the Thunder pseudo resting SGA and Jalen Williams. You know, are those injuries that serious? And if they are, that's going to be a major concern in the playoffs. The Nuggets are just kind of chugging along. And then the big news today was Shams reported that Kat is expected back this week. So that's huge. Obviously, for fantasy purposes, he'd probably be a little bit limited if he does come back and as they gear him up for a playoff run. But with a fully healthy Kat, the Timberwolves are going to be dangerous.
Yeah, that was a big one. That one came through earlier today, like you said, went through a scrimmage on Sunday. So we do have some definitive, like, all right, he is actually taking those steps. And you know, kind of been tracking this one concurrently with Joel Embiid, who had ramped up and started to take contact, took some scrimmages. And then all of a sudden now, of course, he's back in the lineup and you know didn't play on the second night of a back-to-back yesterday, but has played three games. Huge for Minnesota, right? Because this was getting to the point, you know, obviously we've talked about this more so in a season-long fantasy context, but we went so long without an update, really. And, you know, I think it was a little over a week ago, they said, yeah, maybe he could return by the end of the regular season. Even if it's just one or two games, that is so much better to me than Kat showing up, you know, cold for what's ultimately going to be a competitive first round series. I think that's really something that stands out to me, Kieran, about this NBA season is the top seeds in both conferences. There are no cakewalks, right? There's no like you're getting like the Jameer Nelson magic in round one, or you know the Toronto Raptors when they were a sacrificial lamb every year. You know, barring the Bulls or the Hawks somehow making it out of the play-in tournament, I mean, Boston's probably getting Miami, or they're getting Philly, or maybe Indiana in round one, and the Milwaukee's you know getting the scraps of whichever team ends up finishing seventh. And out west, you know, Minnesota, yeah, maybe they get the one seed. That could be in a date with the LA Lakers or even a really good team like the Pelicans, who should have Brandon Ingram back.
Absolutely. And I just want to say those Jameer Nelson Magic teams, they're always good for one playoff win. And then get destroyed. But yeah, absolutely. You know, the Bucks starting with them, you know, they obviously lost to the Pacers in the play-in tournament but the in-season tournament. And, you know, that was kind of like an interesting inaugural thing. Like, how serious are people going to take it or whatever? We're both in the Wisconsin area. I have a lot of friends who are still like, look back at that and are like, the Pacers, man, the Pacers have the Bucks number. Yes. And, you know, the Pacers are a mismatched team with the way that they play or whatever. But as a Bucks fan, you're like, do I want to play the Sixers with Embiid? Do I want to play the Heat again? Do I want to play the Pacers? And then the Knicks just kicked your butt last night. And yeah, Jalen Brunson's averaging 40 a game against you. So you have the number two seed or you are in the number two seed, but does it really matter where you end up? It's going to be a difficult match no matter who you're playing.
Yeah, well, the Bucks' history with the Pacers is what makes this particularly interesting, right? Because I think you look at those three teams and nobody here in Milwaukee wants to face Miami, right? Whether they want to
admit it or not. And that way for years.
Right. You don't want to face Miami. I don't think Boston wants to face Miami for what it's worth. You know, Philly, I think we all agree they're a team that's better than the seven seed. We know why that's the case. That's a brutal matchup, of course, for any one or two seed. And I think Indiana, to me, is clearly the least talented of those teams, but their specific history against the Bucks this season makes that a tough one as well. So ironically, I think the team sitting right below them is like the team I'd want to play in round one, which is Orlando.
Yeah, absolutely. And Orlando brings its own mix of difficulties with the way they play defense, and Paolo and Franz just being multifaceted weapons on both ends of the floor.
Yeah, I mean, they actually played Milwaukee twice in the final four games. So we'll see who's out there. You know, you mentioned the Franz Wagner injury. They haven't ruled him out or haven't even listed him doubtful quite yet, but that certainly could be coming as they prepare for the postseason. And they need to keep winning, right? Because Orlando, you know, would love to be hosting this first round series. Yeah, they're the three seed right now. They're up a half game. I mean, they're you know, if they go 2-2 and the Cavs go 3-1 and the Knicks go 3-1, you know, all of a sudden Orlando could end up as the five seed. But pretty likely at this point that Orlando, New York, and Cleveland will be our 3-4-5 in some order. You know, looking at the Western Conference, Dallas continues to play really well. I mean, this has turned into a really fun team. Like you saw it, you know, in the win yesterday, you know, Kyrie Irving kind of gathering everybody at half court. Like that's not really something you'd associate with Kyrie Irving in the past. I think this has been in some ways kind of a best case season for him specifically. Obviously the numbers have always been great when he's out there, but we've barely talked about Kyrie Irving, Kyrie, and I think that's actually a good thing.
Absolutely. With the what he was making news for the last couple of years, not talking about him is absolutely huge. And obviously the Luka Kyrie duo is going to get a lot of the noise, but we got to talk about PJ Washington and Daniel Gafford, because those two guys coming over since the trade deadline have been absolutely huge. I don't have the numbers in front of me, but the Mavericks were not bottom, but close to the bottom in rim protection in the first half of the season. And obviously, like, the rookie Lively is a good player, but he can't play 48 minutes and he's going to get into foul trouble. He's young still. So having that, and he's hurt now, but like having a veteran guy like Gafford in the paint, and then the PJ Washington spreading the floor, playing good defense. This team isn't just Luka and Kyrie, and obviously they're the headliners and they put up the big numbers, but there's a lot of guys making big time plays and big time moments. And Dante Exum had the shot to send it to overtime last night. Like, these guys, and maybe it is a little bit of Kyrie becoming that team player and puddling guys in and being like, we need to play defense, guys. Just like, did Kyrie really just say that? What's happening? You know, so it's really fun to watch, and they're on an absolute tear, and it's coming at the perfect time. And I wouldn't want to be and we've seen what Luka can do in the playoffs, man. This guy can just turn into the best player on the planet. So it's going to be really interesting. I would not want to face the Mavericks at all if I was in the West.
We're driven by the search for better. But when it comes to hiring, the best way to search for a candidate isn't to search at all. Don't search, match with Indeed. Indeed is your matching and hiring platform with over 350 million global monthly visitors, according to Indeed data, and a matching engine that helps you find quality candidates fast. Ditch the busy work. Use Indeed for scheduling, screening, and messaging so you can connect with candidates faster. Leveraging over 140 million qualifications and preferences every day, Indeed's matching engine is constantly learning from your preferences. So the more you use Indeed, the better it gets. Join more than 3.5 million businesses worldwide that use Indeed to hire great talent fast. And listeners of this show will get a $75 sponsored job credit to get your jobs more visibility at Indeed.com/BlueWire. Just go to Indeed.com/BlueWire right now and support our show by saying that you heard about Indeed on this podcast. That's Indeed.com/BlueWire. Terms and conditions apply. Need to hire? You need Indeed.
Yeah, Dallas not quite out of the woods as far as falling back into the play-in, but they have a two-game cushion between themselves, Phoenix, New Orleans, Sacramento. Pretty friendly schedule the rest of the way here for the Mavs. They're at Charlotte tomorrow night. Should be a very, very winnable game for a team that's won 14 of its last 16. At Miami on Wednesday, second night of a back-to-back. That won't be easy. They get Detroit on Friday, and then at Oklahoma City on Sunday. So magic number to avoid the play-in is 2 for the Dallas Mavericks. All right, well, we've got a question in the chat here from Alan, who his league is still going on. He says, for this week, is Jaren Jackson Jr. a drop? If so, who's the best add, Metu or the center from Washington? So that could be multiple players, Kyrian, because who knows who's going to be out there on any given night for Washington. But we'll talk about Jaren Jackson Jr. first. I mean, if you go to the Grizzlies page on our great website, rotowire.com, keep your kids away from the screen. I mean, this is bad. This is truly, we've been doing this a long time, Kyrian. This is about as bad as I've ever seen. And you get this at the end of the year. Sometimes, you know, these bad tanking teams. Yeah. It's something that we've dealt with in the past, but this has been like over half the season for Memphis. You know, you look at the injury report and there's like 12 guys on it any given night. They have been a little bit more aggressive, in resting guys like Jaren Jackson and Desmond Bane. You know, Bane came back, he immediately played, I think, 5 of the first 6 games, sat out, you know, 1 back-to-back. He's now missed 5 in a row. Jaren Jackson Jr., you know, they were mixing him in, almost kind of matching him with Desmond Bane. He did play a couple games last week and then sat out both sides of a back-to-back against Detroit and Philly on Thursday and Friday. So it's tough, man. I mean, parting ways with a guy who, you know, has top 25 potential at this point in the year, it seems really counterintuitive. They have 4 games this week. They're one of 24 teams that has 4 games, by the way. They play San Antonio Tuesday, Cleveland Wednesday, the Lakers Friday, Denver Sunday. All of these are completely meaningless at this point for Memphis. It wouldn't be shocking to me if Jaren Jackson played another game. I would be very, very surprised if he plays 4 or even 3 games.
Absolutely. I think the only silver lining that could convince you not to drop JJ right now, Triple J, is that those two absences were back-to-back games. So it wasn't like it wasn't like he just like re-injured his quad. He's been dealing with this thing for a really long time. And before that injury, he scored 40 and 35 points in the two games before that against Detroit and in Detroit and in Milwaukee. So like he was playing well and through this quad injury. So like maybe they just wanted to give him these 2 days off. But like you said, I would be very surprised if he played the full four games this week. So I'm, if you're trying to win a championship right now, you don't want a guy that's putting up a zero. So anything's better than that. So I'm erring on the side of caution in this situation. I think he might play again this season, one of those four games, but I do not think he's going to play four, and I would put it at 50-50 that he plays three.
All right. So part two of the question, Chimezie Metu, who continues to play consistent minutes. I wouldn't say big minutes, although he did play 43 minutes against the Nets on Friday, finished with 20.7 boards, three assists, three steals. It's really been the steals for him lately. I mean, he has 12 steals in the last three games, which is wild and is a testament to the fact that he has good hands. It's also not something that you could just bank on for another week. Now, if we're comparing Chimezie Metu to who I presume would be Tristan Vukcevic with the Washington Wizards, so Rashawn Holmes is not technically ruled out. I think he's missed five in a row. He's Rashawn Holmes. There's no real reason for the Wizards to get a late season look at him. Vukcevic has started three games in a row. He'd previously played big minutes off the bench. I think I like him more as a player. What I would ask you, though, is three games of Vukcevic, because the Wizards are on a three-game week, or four of Chimezie Metu. I think that's the choice.
Yeah, and that's where it comes down to. And I think you nailed it on the head with Metu's production's really all in the steals. He scored 20 points last game, but he was a perfect 9-for-9 from the field. I do not expect that to be a thing for like all four of these games upcoming. So that you're not going to really get the offensive production from Metu. So you're kind of banking on 12 more steals over the next four games if you're for production. And Vucevic, double figures in four straight, started three straight, seven rebounds in three of those four games. I think, like I said, you don't want a guy who's putting up zero like JJ, like Jackson. And Metu, you're just relying on defensive production for a guy playing for the Pistons. I don't think that's like, you know, there's not going to be a lot of like haphazard play from the like teams playing against the Pistons. They're a cakewalk. So, you know, I think I'm rolling with Vucevic here. They signed him, they drafted him actually, and then he didn't come over. Then they re-signed him later in the season. So they want to give him a chance. Metu has already like has had plenty of opportunities, but he's had opportunities in the NBA before. Jackson, we already know what he is, and he might miss some games. Vucevic is the guy that the Wizards are like, let's see what we got. Let's throw him out there, and you know, maybe he gets a 20-point, 15-rebound game and carries you to a championship. I think there's a higher floor for him, and I think he has just as high of a ceiling as Metu.
Yeah, I'm with you on that, man. And you know, if you're in a daily lineup league where you know I would use Vucevic on Tuesday, although you know pretty much every team, I think only the Nets and the Cavs are off tomorrow. And you know, then you know maybe you pivot and take the three games out of Metu. Like I think there's an argument here, but to me, I'm much more intrigued by Vucevic. And you know, he's basically like five games into his NBA career, right? So I think he's we only have a week left in the season, but I think he's going to settle in more. I don't think Washington is going to go out of its way to bring back these veterans who've been missing time. And, you know, Vucevic has been putting up decent defensive numbers as well. It hasn't been 12 steals in three games, but he's given you well-rounded production, right? I mean, he had four assists, nine boards, three blocks the other night against Toronto. And the three-point shooting has been terrible. He's been launching a ton, which is good. And that should come around, right? I mean, he's like 1-for-10 over his last couple of games. He had a 1-for-6 game against Milwaukee last week, which they somehow won. I will say the matchups for Washington are not great. They play Minnesota, you know, who's still battling for seeding tomorrow. That could be a disaster. They play Chicago on Friday. That should be decent. And then at Boston on Sunday. My guess is Boston is resting at least one or two key players. I mean, they've had the number one seed locked up now for weeks. So that Boston matchup looks a little scary. Probably won't be as scary as it appears on paper. But yeah, even if he gets off to a rough start against Minnesota tomorrow, I would lean Vucevic there. Matt says, do you think the Rockets will sit guys now that they are eliminated from the playoffs? I think there's a chance. Yeah, I think there's a chance. They play Orlando, Utah, Portland, and the Clippers in game 82. So a couple of nice matchups there. And much like Boston, you know, that Clippers game, depending on what happens over the next few days, that could be one where they're resting veterans. I would say, you know, in terms of guys who you'd be most concerned about missing games this week, you know, what's interesting about Houston is they, you know, they're a fairly young team, right? So it's like, are you really going to shut down Cam Whitmore? Are you going to shut down Amen Thompson? Obviously, Jalen Green's been on a great run. You know, Jabari Smith is in year two. I guess you could point to Van Vliet and Dylan Brooks. But at the same time, you know, at Houston, they don't have draft pick implications. Like it's totally possible they just say, hey, there's 1 week left in the season. We'll just play it out.
I'm going to subscribe to the idea that Van Vliet probably will sit out a couple of these games and Dylan Brooks probably too. I feel like Brooks is probably the type of guy that's like, nah, I'm not going to sit out. I'm going to try to maybe get one more ejection in this final week. But like you said, super young teams, and they've been playing really well. So I don't know if like you want to shut these guys down or you want to be like, let's finish strong. I know we didn't reach like the goal that we wanted to, even though we got hot and we gave ourselves a chance. And then obviously like the Warriors put us away. Like that happens. The Warriors, it's Steph Curry and Klay Thompson. These guys grew up. Jalen Green, Amen Thompson, like these guys grew up watching Steph Curry and Klay Thompson. So to be like, we were on that level for a minute is huge. And I just continue this momentum over the final week. It's not like you got to play 20 more games. It's 1 week of basketball and these guys are 20 years old. So I would really hope that Amen Thompson and Jalen Green and Jabari Smith don't have to rest. And even if they do rest or sit out, like you would like their backups are a lot of veterans like Jeff Green and Jayshon Tate and Jock Landale. Like why would we bench these young guys to like play veterans? I don't know.
That's another really good point. Is their team is like built backwards, right? Yep. Where it's like the young guys are the starters and the older guys are the bench players. So yeah, it's like if they're dying to get a closer look at Boban Marjanovic, maybe they do that. But the more we talk about this, the less convinced I am. The other thing is, and I'd be curious to think if this actually matters. So Houston is getting Brooklyn's first round pick unprotected in 2024. So that as of right now, that would be like the 10th overall pick. They're giving their pick to OKC only top four protected. So that's gone. They're not getting the top four pick. Conceivably, if you're Houston, do you want to keep winning to ensure that that pick is as late as it could possibly be? You know, like if they go 0-4 and you know the Bulls and the Hawks, for instance, go 3-1, you know they would pass them up in terms of draft order. If you're Houston, do you care if you're giving away, I don't know, like the, you know, the 17th pick versus the 19th pick?
I feel like probably not. I would, for me, if I was the GM or the coach, like it's more about just like getting the young guys in. I don't think I'm sitting them down and be like, hey, we don't want to give them the 17th overall pick. Yeah. Like, I don't think that's what's going on in the locker room or anything. I think, there's more bulletin board material than something like that. Moving up three spots in the draft.
Christopher says 2 week finals and he won. Congrats, Christopher, with McBride, Micić, Pippen, Rozier, Giannis, LeBron, Gigi Jackson, and Zion. Said it's a weekly lock league points. Been here all year. Thanks for the entertainment. You're the best. Appreciate that, Chris. Appreciate all your good questions throughout the season and congrats on winning the league. That's what a league winning roster looks like right now, Kieran. McBride, who's playing like 45 minutes a night. Micić, who's been a great late season guy in Charlotte. You know, Scottie Pippen's been playing a ton of minutes. Gigi Jackson. This is the world we're living in.
You definitely deserve that championship, Chris. You put in some work on the waiver wire with those pickups, man. Good work. Good work.
Yeah, impressive. And Chris follows up and says, if Zion didn't come back and play yesterday, he would have lost. So he will always be his hero. Zion. Another strong game yesterday against Phoenix. He, of course, sat out Friday against San Antonio. 29 points, 10 boards, 7 assists, 5 blocks. 5 blocks for Zion Williamson. He had not had more than 3 in any other game this season. Added a steal as well. This is a good seg to talk a little bit about Zion, who I feel like there's going to be like a 2 or 3 year window here where he's still polarizing. Basically, until he stays as healthy as he did this year for another year consecutively, you're always going to have a second thought when you're drafting Zion Williamson. And, you know, in Roto League specifically, I think there's still a disconnect between his profile as a young star in the league and where he ranks in fantasy, partially because he takes a ton of free throws and he's still, you know, he's down under 70%. He's actually taken a step back at the line this year. He's also not shooting threes whatsoever. Just doesn't look like that's going to be a part of his game. going forward. And for the most part, you know, the defensive production has been okay, about a steal a game. It's not typically not blocking five shots. You know, he's under one block per game on the year, but the passing has been better. You know, I think the rebounding, the numbers say he's rebounding worse than he was last year. I still feel like he's mixing in some better spots there. Obviously the scoring's been good. The efficiency has been good. You know, are you kind of comfortable jumping back in on Zion next year?
Yeah, I think so. I think the Pelicans, I've been really high on the Pelicans for a while. The Brandon Ingram missed a lot of time this year. Yep. CJ McCollum missed an extended period of time this year. And to say that Zion has kind of been the steady presence for them is weird. And like you said, I probably like need some more time before I can say that that's like a trend and not just like a one-off. And like you said, like 66 games, he's on pace. How many more games do the Pelicans play this year? Three or four. So he's on pace for around 70. Like, that's fantastic. The playmaking is taking a huge step forward. He took some jumpers last night. I know they weren't threes, but he took some jumpers, and which is encouraging to see. And he was 7 of 8 from the free throw line. So like there's room for improvement. And when you're able to dominate like that and then still say that there's room for improvement, I'm always going to be high on a guy like that. Now, am I going to reach into like the first round for him next year? No. I'm probably like not in my 20-30 range. Like, yeah, I'm thinking about it for sure. Absolutely. He's a walking 25-5-5 guy. And with that defensive production that he's picking up, like, absolutely, there's value there. But I'm definitely not like top echelon type fantasy players for next year.
Yeah, his ADP composite across ESPN, CBS, Yahoo, Underdog, Fantrax, which are all very different, you know, in terms of format and scoring and whatnot, was 39.4 this past year. It has to go up from there, I would imagine. So yeah, I think that 20-30 range is when you might see him to start go off. You know, what's interesting though is if you look at 8-cat total value, he's the 80th ranked player in fantasy, and that's not gospel, right? I mean, that there were some years where Giannis, I think, ranked like 100, and it's really, you know, the weighting on the free throw category is the big one. So you take that out of it, and it's going to be a lot more friendly. And of course, what you have to keep in mind when you look at those rankings is the way you build your team, right? So if you could compensate for it, or you lean into it, if you're in a category league and you say, all right, Zion's going to take 8 or 9 free throws a game, he's going to hit them at 68%. It's going to be tough to crawl out of that. I'll just punt that category. You know, then I think you're not as concerned about it. Or, you know, if you can, you know, grab Steph Curry or, you know, Joel Embiid or whoever, somebody who also is going to take a ton and try to offset that, and maybe you finish in the middle or the upper middle, that's fine too. But, you know, I think ideally if you're taking somebody in the first couple rounds, like, you don't want them to have that glaring hole. But at the same time, I mean, even as well as Zion has played, specifically since the All-Star break, I mean, he's been closer to like 25, you know, 8 and 5 since then. You kind of still feel like there's another level he could go up. He'll only be 24 next year.
Yeah, absolutely. And like, there's so much room for improvement. I just said that, but like, that's crazy for a guy who is already, we consider him one of like a great basketball player of this generation, right? Like college, what he did in college.
A great prospect.
Like he one of the great prospects for sure. But like, there is so much room for improvement. And you look at a guy like Luka, like I think Luka is shooting a career high this year, and he's only shooting like 72% from the free throw line.
Right.
So like, it's not something that's going to like completely destroy your fantasy team as long as you're smart about it and you're building a team around that, knowing that there is a deficiency there for sure.
All right. So looking ahead to next season, I know we've talked about this on the XM show, and I've berated Alex and Brandon about it on this pod a number of times. Brandon gave me some pushback last time we talked about it. Victor Wembanyama, if you got the number one pick, are you taking Victor Wembanyama?
Yeah, absolutely. I was a little more hesitant about it a couple months ago, but absolutely. And the thing that, like, when I was saying this in December and January, was that he wasn't even playing over 30 minutes a game. Last night, he played 43 minutes. And so if you have a guy like Wemby playing 35-plus minutes, like, the stats are just going to come naturally, man. Like, 33 points, 18 rebounds, 6 assists, 7 blocks. I know there's 9 turnovers, but the minutes, he was putting up top 20, top 30 value, and he was only playing 28, 29 minutes a game. I know there's probably some concern, and there's always going to be concern about Wemby's injuries. if he's playing 35 minutes a game next year, does that mean that he's going to have to sit out more games or whatever? And obviously that's a concern, but I want my best player playing as many minutes as possible. And he is one of the best players in today's game at both ends of the floor. I think I haven't looked at the odds recently, but he deserves to be in the conversation for Defensive Player of the Year. He deserves to be the Defensive Player of the Year, in my opinion. And even when the offensive numbers weren't there, he was still putting up crazy defensive stats. The floor is so high and the ceiling is as high as anybody in the game. So I'm super content taking him number one. The only reason I wouldn't is because I have him in our keeper league. So like maybe I don't want to have too many shares of Wemby, but that also kind of sounds dumb just saying it. So yeah, I'm probably taking him if I have the number one pick in every draft.
I think I will too. I think what worries me is I was so concerned about his games played, about his health coming into the year. That turned out to not be a concern, but yeah, I still think you almost wonder, it's like, all right, was this the best case? You know, dude, am I now buying too high? And, you know, maybe next year is when that injury comes. But you can say that about any player, right? I think the way Victor Wembanyama moves, you know, now that we've seen it for 70 games, I'm not as concerned, right? It's like you think back to like some of these big men who are the poster children for being injured. And it's like, yeah, I see why Greg Oden got hurt. He literally looked like he was hurt when he was healthy. You know, Yao Ming, guys like that. It's like Wembanyama, for as big as he is, he doesn't move like somebody who's 7'5". He moves like he's 6'9", and that's part of the reason he's so effective.
And for such a young guy, when he talks about like his training and his stretching and all that, like he's super serious about it. He's like on a LeBron level of like injury prevention and all of that type of stuff. I can't remember which game it was, and I wasn't watching live. I just saw a highlight of it. But he twisted his ankle pretty bad a couple days ago, and he just like got up and was like, "I'm fine." And it's like, Are you rubber? Like, who is that green rubber stick figure when we were younger? But he's so young and so like feels like malleable. Like that would have taken me out for a couple weeks. So you know, the injury prevention thing, and he takes it super seriously. I'm not overly concerned. I shouldn't say overly concerned. I'm not as injuries are a concern for every player, and so Wemby is just like every other player. I'm not saying his size and his stature should put him on a different tier. And you look at Chet, and Chet also put all of those rumors to rest about his frame, and the injury that he had as a rookie was kind of just a freak accident. Like I wasn't like he just kind of stepped on Bron's foot during that pro-am, so I don't know.
Last thing on Wembanyama, I just pulled his 20 highest minute games of the season, which comes out to an average of 34.4 minutes per game. If you want to kind of use like, all right, you know, if he was playing that workload all year, what would the stat line look like? 24 points, 13 and a half boards, 5 assists, 1.2 steals, 4 blocks. And the thing with Wembanyama, assuming he stays relatively healthy, I don't worry about the shot blocking year over year. You know, like he's just so big and so dominant that I guess unless teams just decide, hey, we're not driving on this guy, which seems unlikely, I think he's a lock to at least get to like 3 blocks. That would be the absolute baseline. And obviously there's the potential for that number to sky north of 4 per game, whereas you know, like I made the mistake, you know, paying up for Jaren Jackson in the RotoWire Stake League thinking, all right, I'm going to pair him with Rudy Gobert. I'm going to dominate blocks. We could just check that off. And then Jaren Jackson averages half as many blocks this season per game as he did last season. Like I don't see it, you know, yo-yoing that way for Wembanyama. And even if he has a down year shot blocking, he's still probably leading the league.
Yeah, absolutely. Absolutely. 100%. Like you said, our team's just going to not shoot at the rim. Like that seems like a terrible strategy. And so like, if he has that type of impact, like I guess like cheers to the other teams, but teams are not going to be winning games against the Spurs if they just don't shoot at the rim. And the other thing is he can block 3-pointers. He's been blocking 3-pointers like crazy. So even if teams are more hesitant and he's not getting challenged as much next year, I think the blocks and steals, like, it's not like he's just sitting in the paint and trying to protect the rim at all costs. He's a great defender. I shouldn't say great perimeter defender. Not quite yet.
I think he's pretty good for that size, man.
Yeah, for sure. He can recover really fast and whatever, but his hands or his arms, he's always in the passing lanes and everything. He's the best defensive player in the league already, in my opinion.
I agree. I'm with you on that. I think he's the most versatile defensive player. I think he's the most feared defensive player in the league. I don't think he's going to win Defensive Player of the Year. He is 10-1. The odds are still on the board as opposed to Rookie of the Year, which were pulled like 2 weeks ago. I think we know he's winning that one. Rudy Gobert -3,000, which, you know, much better team defense. I get that. But this is probably as close as we're ever going to see to a rookie perhaps winning defensive player of the year in the modern era. Because I don't know what Wembanyama really could have done more to try to win that. I'm interested to see how close the vote will be, because the odds indicate that Gobert will win it. When somebody's that heavy of a favorite, it's almost an implied lock at that point. I don't think Wembanyama could do anything, over these final three or four games of the year to sway opinions, but there will certainly be people that vote for Victor Wembanyama. I would expect it to be, Gobert maybe gets 65 to 70% of the first place votes, maybe more.
Yeah, absolutely. And the team success and the team defense overall, you probably have to give it to Gobert. And then I also feel like there's, I'm not a voter. I don't know voters. I'm not talking to any voters. I don't have any inside information, but I feel like there's probably some sort of thought process of Wemby's going to get a bunch of awards. He can probably wait 1 year to get some hardware there.
So you mentioned Chet Holmgren, who is number two in the NBA in total blocks behind Wembanyama. Wembanyama's had 245 block shots in 69 games. So Holmgren has played 9 more games. He still has 184, which is a hell of a rookie year, but nowhere close to Victor Wembanyama. That places Chet Holmgren as the 34th ranked fantasy player in 8 category leagues. Doesn't have any glaring deficiency, in the ways that someone like Giannis or Luka or Zion, like we mentioned earlier, does. Obviously, you'd like to see the assists go up in an ideal world, or the steals, but not everybody could just be a 5 category player. And 2.5 assists for a guy who doesn't really handle the ball all that much. You never really thought of Chet Holmgren as a plus passer. I actually think that's a pretty solid number. Like Wembanyama, not playing that many minutes. He was under 30 minutes per game on the year. He's a really interesting case, I think, for next season, because he's not going to have Wembanyama hype, but just the fact that Wembanyama is having the year that he's had, I don't think we've talked quite as much about Chet. And of course, the other piece about that is, he's in a unique situation for a rookie. One, missed his entire rookie year. Two, he's the third or fourth most notable player on his own team, right? So I think the fact that he's given you 17 and 8 with 2.5 assists, 2.5 blocks, he's shooting the three well, he's shooting 53% from the field, it kind of blends in a little bit more, because obviously we focus so much on the Thunder as a team, SGA as an MVP candidate, Jalen Williams taking a big step forward. I think the question is, how big of a step can Holmgren take as a guy who's pretty clearly the third option on this team? And I don't really see that changing anytime soon.
So I think that it's capped, like you said, because of those three other guys on the team. But I think he can take as big of a leap as anybody else in the league. I think he can be a 25-point scorer. I think he can average 10 rebounds. I think he can average two threes and 2.5 blocks per game. Like, he can do all of these things, but it's only a matter of, do the Thunder need him to be that guy?
Right.
Like, right now, he's just, like, I feel like it's disrespectful to say that he's like a complimentary piece, but he's transformed their defense. He allows SGA to space the floor, or he spaces the floor for SGA and Jalen Williams and Josh Giddey, for that matter, who's playing really well recently. But I think it's just the Thunder don't need him to be that guy. The Thunder don't need him to be Victor Wembanyama, because the Spurs don't have any other facets great, and like there's some pieces there. But they're a winning team, and the winning formula is to have Chet be an efficient offensive player and an elite defensive player. So they don't need him to take that step. And that's why I probably won't be projecting that high of a jump for him. If SGA misses any time next year, if Jalen Williams misses any time next year, Chet instantly becomes a top 20 player, in my opinion. He had one. So SGA has missed 4 games in a row, or 5 of the last 6 or something like that. Chet Holmgren had one dud, but he has 3 20-point games over the last 6 games. And he's still the shot isn't necessarily falling. So that's what I'm saying, is the Thunder ask him to be a more prominent scorer, and that efficiency is going to drop. So in category leagues, I think I'm kind of content with him being the guy that he was this year, being a 55% from the field, shooting well from 3, blocking shots, doing all of those things. Points league, obviously you would hope that he would be the number one guy and be super prolific and, shooting 43% from the field, but you'll take 20 points a game or whatever. But
so who are the guys that you missed out on most this season? Not necessarily, because you misprojected them, but by the time we got a couple months into the season, you're looking back, you're looking at where guys rank, and you're thinking, man, I really wish I would have, taken this guy over this guy, or I wish I would have had more shares of player X.
So more shares I wanted of Sengun. I think we talked about it on the XM show when right after the staff league draft that we did, and I went Porzingis over Sengun. And I had just drafted Sengun in the stake league, and I was all hyped about him. And I was like, maybe I spent a little bit too much on a guy that like might be a really bad defender, and you know, Ime is not going to like his defense or whatever. So I was kind of like getting scared of that. And then I was like, maybe I just want a little piece of the Celtics because I don't have any Celtics. And I regretted that decision. I wish I would have been confident with my Sengun projection and been like, I got to take him earlier and spend the money to get him. I only had him in one league. And I wish I had an opportunity to take him in four. And I thought I was thinking of it. And then I was like, I don't need four shares of Sengun. So he's definitely the number one guy. And obviously the injury at the end of the season is devastating, but he was absolutely fantastic. And anytime I looked at his stat lines, I was like, I just wish that I had him rostered in every league.
You know, for me, it's mostly, you know, some of these big name veteran guys who was just fading across the board. Right. And you got to burn early picks still on someone like LeBron. You know, Kevin Durant was a big fade for me if I was picking, you know, in the middle to end of round one. I just thought, you know, the health track record has been a disaster. He, of course, is going to somehow play 75 games this year. You know, Kawhi's missed some time lately, but he still has a chance to play 70 plus, which seems like inconceivable for Kawhi Leonard. You know, Paul George could get all the way to like 76 games if he plays every game the rest of the way. LeBron's going to play over 70. The overall health of these guys who have proven to be risky investments over the last few years. You know, maybe I was just a year late on this. It's been a remarkably healthy season, I think, overall. Obviously, you know, over the last couple of weeks, we've had some hits. But for the bulk of the meaningful portion of the fantasy regular season, a lot of these big name guys stayed healthy. So in retrospect, you know, I was leaving a lot of value on the table. I mean, LeBron was going pretty late, later than he should have, even with the risk, I thought, in a lot of drafts. And like there was one league where, you know, I had the choice to take LeBron after ADP. And I looked at it and I said, you know what? I think he's going to play 52 games. And I took Pascal Siakam, who has been fine, but he hasn't been LeBron. I mean, LeBron's returning first round fantasy value in 8 cat leagues.
Yeah, that's a fantastic point. I did an article for RotoWire before the season, and it was what to do with each first round pick. And I finished it. It was points based idea. And I finished it with LeBron and KD. And I got a lot of pushback, and I was like, do you really want to take LeBron and KD in this season? Like, blah, blah, blah. And that pushback kind of like turned me away from actually following my own advice. And so I didn't take any of them. And I definitely regret not grabbing those guys. And obviously, like the stake league that we're in, those guys carried Poole to a championship. So definitely regret not. And then the other thing is the new game rule. Was that only because of the new game rule? And you have to play X amount of games to be qualified to win end of season awards. And I don't know if I'm going to subscribe to that fully, but I do think it played a part for sure.
I think it's possible that it played a part as far as, you know, LeBron specifically, as you know, as somebody who, you know, does a lot of our news coverage, he's questionable every single game, right? And it's ultimately pretty rare. It's still headline news when LeBron misses a game, because even though he's questionable for three straight seasons, he almost always plays. So I think it's cut down on some of those nights, maybe where LeBron's like, look, I you know, I might be almost 40 years old. I still want to make all NBA second team. So I'm going to make sure I play tonight. But obviously what's ended LeBron's season the last couple of years have been these, you know, kind of freak injuries, right? So I think in some ways we've just gotten lucky with some players who've maybe had bad breaks, who've had serious injuries. They've just been able to avoid those this year. But now it creates a situation of like, well, okay, so is LeBron, you know, are people taking him inside the top 20 now again this year? Am I willing to pay that price, knowing that he's coming off of what felt like somewhat of a fluky season in a positive way for his health? So it's going to be dicey, man. There's really no correct answer, right? Because LeBron continues to play extremely well when healthy. That's been the case throughout his mid to late 30s. And I think for the most part, we're going to continue to see that with Durant, right? I mean, I know he struggled very early in the season, but within like a week, you're like, okay, yeah, this is the Kevin Durant that we thought we were getting. And he's on track once again to turn in a top 10 fantasy season. At some point, you know, not everybody could be LeBron, Tom Brady, but Curry's in this category as well. I mean, you know, Harden, guys like that who've been around for the last decade plus, they're all getting into their mid 30s. None of them are really slowing down significantly. And I think even Kawhi, you know, belongs in that conversation as well. So I feel like I'm going to go into next season with the same situation, looking at Kevin Durant with the 6th overall pick. And I don't know if I can do it.
Yeah, absolutely. And I think Kevin Durant, specifically, if Bradley Beal didn't miss all of that time, it probably would have opened up a couple nights where KD could have taken a night off or something like that. And obviously every team deals with injuries, but that's just the most notable one that pops in. Like, you got to have KD on the floor if you don't have Bradley Beal or Devin Booker, and they were both absent a lot of the time.
So we have a great page on RotoWire that shows you, you know, total value per game value for the season. You can input your category settings and get a list. There are a couple names that really jump out here. Austin Reeves, 33rd most valuable player in category leagues. This is total value, not per game. So the fact that I don't think he's missed a single game this year. He's played 79 games. That helps. Dante DiVincenzo is the 37th overall player, and D'Angelo Russell is the 31st overall player. Now, what all those guys have in common is they've missed no time or barely any time. Russell's played the fewest games of those three, and he's on pace for 76. I don't think DiVincenzo's missed a game, and like we just said, I don't think Austin Reeves has missed a game. So where do those guys go next year? I know that it's tough to just kind of hand out an ADP, but you know there's going to be inflation for all three. And if you had to choose one of those three, which one would you say, okay, if I have to burn a top 50 pick, we'll say on one of these guys, I'm most comfortable doing it on this one?
I'm probably going Reeves. I would be the most comfortable going with Reeves for sure. I think that there's room for him to grow still as a player. I think Russell was kind of like, you know, we know what Russell is, and he's kind of thrived in like a new role. He kind of got challenged a little bit defensively, and just like, can he carry the offense? And there's questions about like, what is LeBron like gonna have him on the end of the bench by the end of the season? So I think Russell kind of like rose to the occasion and played like kind of like out of his projection. I think DiVincenzo, it really depends on Julius Randle's health next season. By all accounts, he should be 100% back. That Randle's injury opened up so many shots in New York. And obviously, Brunson's taking like 30 shots a game. It's not actually, but it feels like that some nights. And some nights he actually is taking that many. So Randle being back would significantly impact DiVincenzo's opportunities to get those threes up. But I love DiVincenzo as like an overall player. I would still take him like, you know, like I'll say like 50 range, 60 range, maybe. I think there's just like a lot of, he's really solid defensively. The Knicks are just a great defensive team. So there's a lot of like scrappy plays and steals to be had there. And then Austin Reeves, just the total package. And I think, you know, we kind of talked about LeBron not missing many games. And if that, like, whenever Bron misses time, Reeves is the guy that's going to step up, and he's that next player behind AD and LeBron. That like the guy that's like the young gun that can carry the team when needed. So I think I'm going Reeves with the highest there, and then I'll probably go DiVincenzo and Russell.
I think I'm with you. I think that's the right order. I certainly would have Reeves one. I think he has the highest floor of that group, and it's also very possible, if not likely, that Russell, you know, doesn't return to the Lakers next season, and we're in a completely different spot. I mean, it's felt like he's been on a 2.5 month heater that just simply cannot continue. Whereas, you know, Reeves's numbers don't really jump off the page. Like, you watch Austin Reeves, and you're not. Sometimes when I watch the Lakers, which is very often, you're seeing D'Angelo Russell, and you're just like, how did he just hit a 7-3 of the night? You know, it's like this can't continue. And again, it has for like 2 months. I get that, but you know, Reeves is not, in my opinion, playing over his head at all. If anything, you know, you think early in the year, they're bringing him off the bench. He's not playing well. It was clunky. I think his numbers could look a little bit better if they had actually, you know, used the correct rotations early in the year. And he's still young enough in his career.
What took so long to get Rui back in the starting lineup, man? What was that? I drafted Rui at the, like, one of my last picks in almost every draft, and then he was dropped after a couple of weeks because he just wasn't getting PT. It was crazy. After last year's playoffs, I felt like he was – I'm not going to say he was the reason they went to the Western Conference Finals, but he was a huge contributor.
He was. And look, I got to take a huge L on Rui. I thought they overpaid. I thought, you know, he's like, yeah, you had like four good playoff games. I thought it was crazy. He had, you know, given us four like objectively bad years in Washington. You know, there's the, you know, reporting late to training camp, just some kind of questions about, you know, is over the mental side of things for Hachimura. I thought giving him that contract was just kind of paying for wishful thinking in a lot of ways, but no, he's been fantastic, man. I mean, especially these last couple of months when the Lakers have been playing their best basketball. And, you know, the other thing about Reeves and Russell is like, LeBron has barely missed time. AD's barely missed time. You know, they add all these, you know, all these depth pieces through the offseason. I think, you know, Gabe Vincent getting injured and missing so much time to the point where he's just not really been a factor, I think that's helped both of those guys a lot, but they still went out and got Spencer Dinwiddie, who on a lot of nights is playing 20, 25 minutes, if not more. And yet Russell's still getting his numbers. Reeves, for the most part, is still getting his numbers. So I do think there's an argument that, you know, they could be in a better rotation situation next year. Like Reeves specifically, I think, you know, there's room for him to grow, whereas it does feel like, you know, D'Angelo Russell is probably having a best case second half. DiVincenzo is a really interesting one because, like you mentioned, you wouldn't necessarily think positional wise that Julius Randle being out would have that big of an effect. It was that plus OG Anunoby, of course, missing so much time. But I mean, you could draw a clear line. Like look at the first exact half of the season for Dante DiVincenzo. He was averaging like 12 points a game, right? And you know, if you look at since the All-Star break, which is 23 games, and it goes back further than that, 36 and a half minutes per game. He's averaging 6 more points than he was before the All-Star break. The assists are up, the rebounds are up. Obviously, the three-point volume is way up. But on the year, I mean, he's north of 41% from beyond the arc. So I think he also benefits significantly from playing in New York, because if he was playing for any other coach, I think instead of playing 42 minutes a night for a two-week stretch, he's playing like 36, which is still great, but those extra 6 minutes definitely matter. To me, it'll come down to with him next year, what did the Knicks do this offseason, right? Because Randall's going to be back. OG is going to be back. You know, Josh Hart, Jalen Brunson, those guys will be back. Do they go out and add another guard or wing, you know, who would significantly challenge DiVincenzo for playing time? And by that, I mean, you know, he's playing 26, 27 minutes instead of 35, 36.
Absolutely. And I think one thing that was surprising to me, at least, was Bojan Bogdanovic's impact in New York after the trade. I thought he was going to slide into the starting lineup. I thought he was going to be playing a lot of minutes. I thought he was going to.
I thought that was going to be really bad for DiVincenzo.
Yeah, I 100%. Yeah. And you know, it's probably the defense that Thibs doesn't like, but he just has not seen any consistent playing time. So your worry about them going out and adding another a wing like that, like I don't know who would have that serious of an impact, like negative an impact on DiVincenzo. Like he's already proven that he can outperform a guy like Bogdanović, who by all intents and purposes has been a fantastic floor spacer everywhere he's been. Mm-hmm. And he's played on the Jazz, won a lot of games, I think they were the number one seed at least once under Snyder with Donovan Mitchell and those guys. And he played big playoff minutes. So like, I don't really know who would be available for them to go out and get that would like eliminate DiVincenzo's value. I know like Malik Monk is available this offseason, but like honestly for the Knicks, like I'm taking DiVincenzo over Monk. Yeah. I like Monk as a player, but just for the Knicks specifically, like I like DiVincenzo. He's a fantastic fit.
I think the only thing that would really harm him, like I don't know if there's any, you know, mid-level free agents. Like, yeah, maybe they, you know, bring in a veteran who steals some minutes from DiVincenzo, but I think you're right, because I thought Bogdanović would be that guy, you know, right? I mean, obviously they don't necessarily play exactly the same position, but Bogdanović could play the three, could play the two if you need him to, and they're barely playing him. I mean, he's got to be averaging, what, 14, 15 minutes tops since bringing him in, and it's been even worse over the last few weeks. I mean, he's had some, like, single-digit nights in terms of minutes. Very strange, very strange. But Tibbs has his guys, right? And if you're one of those guys like DiVincenzo is, it's a huge benefit. I think the only thing that could really harm him would be the Knicks making that splash trade, right? Which, you know, could they push everything in for, you know, Donovan Mitchell if he becomes available, or Mikal Bridges, or whatever name you want to throw out there, which we need to get Mikal Bridges to New York just to complete the Villanova triumvirate. If they were to bring in Donovan Mitchell, we'll say, just for fun, yeah, that would be very bad for DiVincenzo. The other thing is he might get shipped out in that deal, right? If you're trading for someone on that level, it's not just picks. One, you need salary, and two, you might need a sweetener. And I think that actually opens up a kind of an interesting avenue for New York, where it's like, yeah, you have somebody in DiVincenzo who you really feel like you hit on, it, you know, bringing him in, but can you now parlay this best case finish to the year for him into, you know, a better long-term asset? I think it's something they would consider.
Absolutely. And he did sign a pretty a decent sized contract, I think, for 4 years in July. So they have him under team control at a pretty relatively cheap price, $12 million a year. I think they did. And I know Stephen A. Smith and all these talking heads are like, the Knicks need a superstar. They need to make that big splash. If Julius Randle and OG Anunoby were healthy for the last couple of weeks, they're probably surpassing Milwaukee after this downfall, and they're making a name.
They're one game back right now.
Yeah,
so it's nuts.
I think you just roll with what you got, and you know, maybe if they're playing just barely above 500 ball at the trade deadline next year, they make a move. But I don't think they're doing anything this offseason. Major this offseason.
Yeah, it's the Knicks, so there are going to be whispers. I mean, history strongly suggests that they won't do anything, even if they want to, because you know, it just hasn't worked for them. But I if you have the opportunity to bring in someone like Mitchell, I'm usually of the belief that you just kind of do it. But at the same time, I think the, you know, this notion that they don't have a superstar, it depends where you draw the line, I guess, on superstar versus star. But the jump that Jalen Brunson has made specifically in the last year, and obviously we started to see that last year, but he's gone up another level this year. I don't feel like there's this glaring, oh my gosh, we don't have the one guy. You might not have the one guy who's as good as Boston's one guy or Milwaukee's or, you know, Denver's or OKC's or whoever you want to throw out there, but you got somebody who's pretty close. And, you know, I think the Knicks are way up there in terms of chemistry, in terms of how these guys play together. So I get that if you're, you want to be careful about preserving that and not just, you know, doing talent over fit, which has gotten teams in trouble in the past. All right. We got a question here in the chat before we head out. What was it like playing high school ball with Sam Hauser, Kieran? Is this accurate?
Yeah. Sam was my shooting partner for a couple of years. He's a couple of years younger than me. I was a junior when Sam Hauser and Trevor Anderson were freshmen. And then Joey Hauser, Sam's brother, was like in eighth grade when I was a senior. Sam is fantastic. He is the nicest kid. He's the super smart dude. Was always doing his homework on the bus on the ride home when I wasn't. You know, he was like a senior as a freshman. You know, looking back at those times, I thought I was a really good basketball player. And shooting with him every day, I was like, I'm terrible. I'm bad. And then now seeing him, I was like, well, maybe I wasn't as bad as I thought I was. So it was kind of embarrassing to be destroyed by a freshman every day in practice, but it couldn't have been a better time. And like meeting someone like that, his whole family is really nice. His mom was the athletic director at our high school. His dad was like a gym teacher, and he was the women's coach too. So they were always around. Great family, super nice kid. And I could not be happier with all the success that he is having. Every time I see the plus minuses for the Celtics, and Hauser's like at the top because, you know, he plays limited minutes most of the time, getting a lot of PT with them resting guys. But his three-point prowess and like can take that team to the next level when he comes in at the end of quarter, sometimes in the playoffs. And so I like seeing all of those plus minus stats with his name by him. It's pretty special.
Do you feel partially responsible for his success? You know,
I taught him everything he knows, obviously. Yeah. No, I probably taught him all of the things that he shouldn't be doing. If I could take credit for that, he did everything the opposite of me, and it turned out pretty good. So I'll take credit for that. Sure.
All right. Good note to end on. Good question from Matt. I'm embarrassed. I didn't know this, Kieran. I had no idea. We'll have to discuss this more off air.
I bring it up a lot, and so I try to not bring it up as much.
If I played with any NBA player ever at any level, I would be talking about it as much as possible. So not going to hold you on that. All right. On that note, we'll be out of here. We'll still be running. I believe we're down to 4 episodes per week. The Friday waiver wire pod, obviously with the fantasy season ending this week. That one will be no more, but we'll continue running podcasts throughout the postseason. If you're playing DFS contests, if you're betting, if you're doing season long or playoff long fantasy, I should say, we'll have advice there. Talk about what we're seeing each week. Kieran, appreciate you stepping in as always, man. We'll have to do this again soon. We'll get you back on the XM show. You can hear us talking hoops on Sirius XM Fantasy, 11 to 1 p.m. Central, Monday through Thursday. You can catch me and Alex Barutha on the RotoWire NBA show, 7 to 7:30 p.m. Eastern over on NBA Radio. Although, no show tonight because we have no games. Kieran, good stuff, man. Looking forward to chatting with you more and looking forward to getting the playoffs started.
Thanks for having me, Nick. Talk to you later.